Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Robert Gambier Bolton, born in 1854, was the official photographer of Queen Victoria's animals. He was an English anthropologist, naturalist, and photographer of natural history. His photography is still sought after by collectors, and some of his pictures are on display in the Natural History Museum. He was a fellow of the Royal Geographic Society and a fellow of the Zoological Society. He was also the author of Ghosts in Solid Form, an investigation of a certain little-known phenomena, materializations. His book was the result of carrying out a series of experiments over 7 years, which resulted, rather astonishingly, in multiple manifestations of dead people, though it was not without its dangers. Gambier writes, "I've been permitted to examine the sensitive." Here he means the medium, at the moment when an entity clad in a fully formed temporary body was walking amongst the experimenters, and the distorted features, the shriveled up limbs and contorted trunk of the sensitive at that moment proclaimed the danger connected with the production of this special form of phenomena. According to Gambier, the medium's body and face had entirely changed, from healthy and vibrant to shriveled up and distorted, as the materialized spirit took energy from the body of the medium, leaving him withered and depleted. As is still the case, Gambier admits that materialization mediums are exceptionally rare, and in fact these days only a handful across the world seem to genuinely exist. Of course, there has been fakery by unscrupulous con artists, as there will always be, and through the ages, they've been unceremoniously exposed and their reputations deservedly ruined. But Gambier was wise to this possibility and insists that he rigidly guarded against this in his experiments by putting in place a number of measures, including checking for secret hidden doors or mirrors in the rooms that were used. In fact, for experiment one, he went to rather extreme lengths to avoid any possibility of being fooled by conducting the experiment in a caravan in the middle of a forest in the middle of the night. This was, says Gambier, a simple but exceedingly severe test. Well, the location was the middle of Lyndhurst Forest in Hampshire, and the medium that Gambier used was virtually blind. He was a man in his 40s who, Gambier says, was taken by us on a dark night to a spot totally unknown to him, as he had only just arrived from London by train. The medium was taken inside a large travelling caravan, which Gambier says he had never been to before. Gambier had purchased the caravan the day before from a builder, and earlier in the day, he'd made a visit to the caravan to thoroughly examine it inside, to satisfy himself that no one was or could possibly be concealed inside of it. He then locked the caravan up and put the key in his pocket, where it remained until they returned with the medium that night. As they reached the caravan, amid the complete blackout of the swathe of trees in the forest, Gambia locked them all inside. This test, he said, would be extremely difficult because the conditions he considered as so utterly bad as to make failure a certainty. There wasn't even a comfortable chair for the medium to be seated in. There was no soft music to create a conducive atmosphere, as is usually the case in seances, and no audience of sitters to lend their energy to the medium. Yet astonishingly, within a quarter of an hour, Gambia reports, the figure of a tall man stood before us, a man so tall that he was compelled to bow his head. The partition in the ceiling of the caravan above him was 6 foot high. The man then began to speak, giving his rank as colonel and telling them he'd been killed in Egypt. During his life, he told them, he was deeply interested in spiritualism and materialization of spirits, and he had come, he said, to prove to you that I am not the medium masquerading before you. Stand close to me and so settle the matter, said the tall man. Gambier immediately moved towards the tall figure and stood alongside him, almost touching him, and he discovered that the spirit man's features were completely unlike that of the blind medium. Gambier wrote, the man towered above me, 4 inches taller than the medium. After a few minutes, the spirit figure disappeared, only to be replaced by a new one, a slightly built younger man who was smaller in height and claiming to be a recently deceased member of the royalty. The spirit asked them to deliver a message to his mother, the queen. Well, at this point, Gambia's notes on this first experiment end, but they are swiftly followed by his description of experiment number 2, which in contrast took place in Peckham, southeast London, on a summer's day in July. The same blind medium was used again. Sunlight streamed into the room around the edges of the window blinds. Yet, in spite of this utterly hopeless situation, again a spirit figure appeared in the room. He stood beside the medium, then walked out into the room and stood between them, talking to them in a deep, rich voice. At the same time, says Gambier, we could hear the medium 12 feet away, moving uneasily on his chair and groaning. In another of his experiments, Gambier used a medium who, rather than sitting enclosed in a cabinet, sat out among the small group of sitters, and like them, was able to watch as the materialized spirits built up beside him and talking to them during the process. Most of Gambier's mediums went into trance, but this one appeared to have the ability to enable materializations without needing to do so. 2 of the sitters, that is the guests, who were present told Gambier after the seance that they could see a thin white mist or vapor coming from the left side of the medium, which passed into the sitter nearest to the medium, then to the next sitter, then the next, and so on, until the whole of the 16 guests had been gone through. And then it reaches the medium again and disappears into his right side. Gambier says, we assume from this that the power, call it what you will, necessary for the formation of one of these temporary bodies starts from the medium, passes through each sitter, drawing from each. At this seance, there were also 2 note takers who both later agreed they saw a soft, white, dough-like substance seeming to rest on the floor somewhere near the right side of the medium. This mysterious substance increased in bulk and commenced to pulsate and move up and down, swaying as it grew in height. Then, says Gambier, the entity quickly sets to work to mould the mass into something resembling a human body, commencing with the head. Then the rest of the upper portions of the body soon follow. The legs and the feet come last, he says. The spirit is then able to walk amongst the sitters. When the spirits materialize, Gambier would touch them, and on handling different portions of the materialized bodies, says their flesh is found to be both warm and firm. The hands, arms, legs, and feet are quite perfect. And he has, he says, taken a very detailed look at these materialized spirits, scrutinizing them at close quarters carefully. And in his opinion, every materialization appeared to be at least a third smaller, except in regard to height, than those of human beings. Gambier also claims to have seen materialized babies and infants. And some spirits, he says, have come through aged as they were in life before they died, showing all the characteristics of old age for the purpose of identification by the guests. But he adds, we have seen materialized infants too, and on one occasion, two stillborn children appeared in our midst simultaneously, one showing distinct traces on its little face of a hideous deformity which it possessed at the time of its premature birth, a deformity known only to the mother who happened to be present that evening. Gambier points out here, we are told that for the purpose of identification, the entity will return to Earth in an exact counterpart of the body which he alleges that he occupied at the time of his death, in order that he may be recognized by his relatives and friends. A spirit who had lost a limb during his Earth life will return minus that limb. But Gambier adds, as soon as the identification has been established successfully, all of this changes instantly. The four limbs will be seen, and the spirit will henceforth show themselves to us in the prime of life. He says the spirits tell him emphatically that they are just as they really look and feel in the sphere in which they now exist. One guest at Gambier's seances was a ship's doctor, who, although the fact was quite unknown to everybody else, proved to be an expert linguist. This became apparent after the medium began to speak in seven different foreign languages, though he had never been out of England. The ship's doctor conversed with spirits in French, German, Japanese, Chinese, and Russian, and even in the language of one of the hill tribes of India. In one perhaps rather comical session, when they were having a seance, some Parsi guests from India were there. For the entire duration of the session, the spirits that materialized carried on their conversations in Hindustani, and a heated debate broke out between the Indian guests and the spirits that had materialized over the disposal of their bodies, the entities insisting upon cremation. And Gambier says the noise they made during this session was almost deafening. Gambier used a series of six mediums during his experiments, and his reports on the results are, he believes, sufficient to prove that we who have witnessed these marvels are neither hallucinating, insane, nor liars when we solemnly affirm that we have both seen and handled the materialized bodies. For experiment number 5, this seance took place at Gambier's own home in London, where, he says, a tall and particularly graceful woman materialized, who was seen visibly walking amongst the sitters, talking to them and showing them her hands, the fingers of which being unusually long and tapering. Experiment 6 took place at the Psychological Society in London. The medium sat amongst the guests, not using a cabinet. The two guests on either side of the medium held his hands in theirs. They were the president and vice president of the Psychological Society. Suddenly, a voice began to be heard, distinctly audible to all of the guests, of which there were 14. Two men had also been posted outside the door to act as security, ensuring that no one surreptitiously entered the room. And they both later confirmed hearing the spirit voices too. Soon, a spirit physically appeared, a slender man, who, after passing mysteriously through or over the circle formed by the sitters, walked slowly to the harmonium. The spirit man took a seat on the music stool and proceeded to play half a dozen perfectly harmonious chords, using both hands, while working the pedals with both feet. While this was happening, the medium was held securely during the whole time, at a distance of about 20 feet from the music stool. After about half an hour, the spirit man left the room, and another figure appeared. This spirit apparently suggested that the harmonium should be played again, so Gambier himself got up, sat at the harmonium, and began to play. Suddenly, the medium said to Gambier, "Look behind you, please," to which Gambier turned his head, and, he said, almost touching me, stood the same tall and slender figure of a man, and observed that his features were distinctly different to the medium, as well as being several inches taller too. Thus, he said, ensuring that this was not the medium impersonating the spirit figure. Experiment 7 took place in Whitehall, London, home to British politicians, where a male medium was taken to a very plush office. A seance had been arranged at the request of two young acquaintances of Gambier. He purposely doesn't give their names, but says that they hold positions of state and have never allowed the fact to leak out. In other words, in their line of work, it would not have been seemly for it to become known that they were communing with the dead, and they kept the seance a secret, not wishing to jeopardise their careers by admitting to such things. The visiting medium, Gambier says, had never been to this building before. As the seance began, the figure of a tall, elderly man appeared, who stooped slightly as he walked. He claimed to be a lord who had served in the Houses of Parliament, and he was, says Gambier, recognised by all the men present. Then, two more spirit figures appeared in human form, as well as a small animal from India. And again, it becomes rather comical, as Gambier writes, "In spite of my imploring the entities not to let him do so," he means the spirit people, "or at least to keep him in check in such a palatial apartment, this the entities declared incapable of doing. As a result, the materialised spirit creature apparently climbed onto the expensive desk and scurried around madly, resulting in all the paperwork and pens being scattered everywhere in the ensuing mayhem. In another dramatic experiment, a female spirit appeared, who then dematerialised gradually like the Cheshire Cat. In this case, the male medium was seated in a corner of the room and wedged in there tightly by the ring of guests grouped around him. The female spirit walked out amongst the guests and stood talking to them for about 5 minutes. At the same time, one of the legs of the wooden chair the medium was sitting on suddenly gave way and he fell forward into Gambier's arms. Fortunately, Gambier was sitting next to him. And he says, the entity was not nearly so startled as the sitters. When this spirit left, it passed, he said, to all appearances through the floor. And this seems to be a common feature of materialisation because many other mediums and sitters have witnessed the same thing. And perhaps this is the strongest argument against any trickery being carried out because someone impersonating a spirit simply can't disappear into nothingness by sinking into the floor. Gambier's final experiment, number 9, took place in Eaton Square, London, with a male medium. In Gambier's detailed records, he notes manifestations of both beasts and birds sometimes appeared, the most startling being that of a deceased seal, which apparently stayed long enough to tear some lace. The lace was on the dress of a female guest. A medical man, who was also present, made careful inspection of the lace that had been torn, while everyone else was instructed to remain in their seats. The medical man, a doctor, reported that there were 5 green-coloured hairs hanging in the torn lace, which had evidently become detached from the little animal's legs. A naturalist friend of Gambier's, who was also present, confirmed that, having often handled seals in his profession, these hairs did indeed appear to be seal hairs. They wrapped the hairs in tissue paper and then placed them inside a dampproof and lightproof tight box. Strangely, however, after a few days, the hairs commenced to dwindle in size and then disappeared entirely. Gambier adds, it was those 5 little hairs which settled the sneers of our would-be critics. Apparently the same thing happened to any material that manifested during the seances. It will be collected in the same type of box, yet the material always decreased in size and eventually disappeared. Curiously, Gambier says, it has been proved by means of a self-registering weighing machine on which he was seated that the actual loss in weight to the medium when a fully materialised entity was standing in our midst was no less than 65 pounds. Again in Boston, but 40 years later, American Edward Brackett was a sculptor and conservationist, maintaining species of flowers and shrubs. He became involved in the scientific breeding of specific species of fish, and he also sculpted the bust of John Brown, a leading martyr in the abolition of slavery, before Brown was executed. But he too had a sideline in which he investigated spirit materializations, and he would go on to write the book, Materialized Apparitions, If Not Beings from Another Life, What Are They? Brackett believed that being a sculptor would enable him to detect the slightest difference between objects, and he emphasised, I have an abhorrence of fraud, which he was determined to root out during his investigations. Unfortunately, no matter how scrupulous Brackett set out to be, he was fooled on one occasion, for it was around this time that an anonymous writer had also set out to expose trickery within seances. which was often flagrant yet ingeniously deceptive, for there was money to be made in seances, at the expense of the most vulnerable who in their grief were desperate to be reunited with their dead loved ones. The anonymous writer published a pamphlet with a rather strange title. It was called Some Account of the Vampires of Onset, and it had the intention of unmasking some of the popular mediums of the day in Massachusetts. Onset is a town in Massachusetts, and presumably the writer is referring not to literal vampires, but rather to the leeches of fake mediums who were there, actively working at the time. The pamphlet says, "The compiler of this little pamphlet is not an opponent of spiritualism. On the contrary, he has for many years been interested in the study of psychical phenomena. However, he became determined to expose what he calls the vile creatures who, under the mask of mediumship, have been coining money from the most sacred feelings of the human heart." The writer did not appear to be alone in their sentiment. They say that such vermin are permitted among people claiming to be civilized and respectable is a matter of profound astonishment to a large number of spiritualists. One such medium the writer investigated was called Mrs. Cowan, who Brackett, the sculptor, also sat with. Fortunately, Brackett didn't include Mrs. Cowan in his book as a medium he could vouch for, and he had apparently been furious when he learned of the medium's tricks. The Vampires of Onset describes how Mrs. Cowan came to be caught out when a young lady confessed to a Boston Herald newspaper reporter that clever deception had been used at her seances. The young lady told the reporter that she herself was very poor, and one day she was introduced by another lady to the possibility of some fruitful earnings if she pretended to be a materialized dead person at a seance. Mrs. Cowan and her husband then visited her, she explained, and told her how she could help them. The young lady said she then made visits to the Cowan's home on several occasions to attend rehearsals. "I was induced to take up the business," she explained to the reporter. "The salary they offered was in excess of what I could possibly earn in my chosen occupation. The spirit, when inexperienced, usually receives $1 for each seance. Mrs. Rich, who was another impostor, she said, was paid $3 a seance, and this is the highest price I've ever known to be paid. I should say that $1.50 is a pretty fair price for playing a spirit." The young lady said her role was to replace the more experienced spirit impersonator, Mrs. Florence K. Rich, who, she said, was a performer of such ability in this line as to make her services in great demand in other cabinets. It would appear then that it was not just Mrs. Cowan's seances where trickery was carried out. The first time the young lady worked at a seance held by Mrs. Cowan, it was at an afternoon seance, she said. "Mrs. Rich, in the garb of a spirit, led me from the cabinet as another visitor from the unseen world. I advanced to where Dr. Whitney and his wife were sitting and represented myself as their dead daughter, Ethel." There were more spirit impersonators too, she explained. "The male spirits," she said, "were impersonated by Mr. Cowan's brother Andrew, while Mrs. Cowan and I played the role of female spirits, each having our signals for entrances and exits." She explained how she and the other performers hid from the audience. In the rear of the cabinet used by the Cowans was a door leading into a room which the spirits used as their headquarters. This door had been locked with a great show of sincerity and the key handed to someone in the circle for safekeeping. However, what the audience didn't know was that Mr. Cowan had a stick which could be inserted into the casing of the lock of the door to open it for the spirit impersonators, who then could noiselessly enter the cabinet amid the singing circle and noise of the cabinet organ. They each wore white robes that were shrouded in black cambric while passing from the room into the cabinet, thus rendering them invisible in the dim light of the seance room. A secret hiding place for the impersonators was also available after Mr. Cowan removed the floor of a bay window and placed the cabinet in that location. "Yet," she said, "to all appearances, this cabinet was foolproof. A trapdoor had been placed in the floor by means which the spirits could enter from the cellar. Business went on prosperously," she says. At some of the seances that Mr. Brackett attended, she claims, "I personated his niece Bertha, whom he desired to see on every occasion, always calling him uncle and grasping him by the hand. Mr. Brackett would express great delight at seeing me." She explains how she managed to fool him. "I would materialise for Mr. Brackett at the back of his chair or in some remote part of the room. In order to do this, it was necessary for me to creep behind the black curtain that hung around the wall, counting the chairs by feeling as I crept along, until I came to the one occupied by Mr. Brackett. I would then jump up and greet him and take him by the hand." She was not the only one to fool Brackett, she claims. "Andy always personated Mr. Brackett's dead brother George, and we were often greatly amused by his enthusiastic descriptions of our seances. The young lady goes on to explain other deceptions carried out upon the guests. A Mr. Russell of Cambridgeport was very anxious to see his three darlings, as he designated his two deceased wives and his intended third. However, at this seance, only the young lady herself and the medium were present. "How do you suppose we managed it?" she asked the reporter, without waiting for a reply. "It was very simple. We merely rigged up Andy in female apparel." Andy was a little shaky, however, having positively refused to sacrifice his moustache. And so, the excuse was invariably offered that the spirit was never strong enough to get very far away from the cabinet. We had many a laugh over Andy's nervousness while wearing petticoats. She and her fellow impersonators found it all rather good fun. Then there's another pamphlet entitled Notes from Boston, Startling Evidence of the Deception Practiced by Materializing Mediums, written by a person using the pseudonym Guillaume. And the fraud in Massachusetts is further exposed, thanks to a Mr. Curtis in the pamphlet, who was apparently a retired clothing business owner, very wealthy, and living at the Clarendon Hotel. Well, in April 1882, he invited a number of people to go to his hotel apartment, where he showed them a large array of wigs, clothes, mosquito nets, cork stilts, moustaches, white shawls and more, which had been captured, mainly by Mr. Curtis, in the frequent exposure of the Boston mediums. Guillaume writes particularly of a recurring spirit child called Little Elise, who, he said, was never known to advance into the circle for the best of reasons. The young woman who personated her was upon her knees and attired in a child's frock. As a result of his expose, Guillaume revealed that Mr. Curtis had received a number of anonymous letters threatening him with bodily harm, and one went so far as to intimate an assassination probable. But Mr. Curtis said he was not frightened. It's important to include accounts like this because trickery certainly did happen, both then and still now. And although physical mediumship is exceptionally rare these days, a medium called Gary Mannion was captured on infrared in 2016 at a seance in Essex, masquerading in the dark as a dead person. When the lights of the seance room were turned back on, what Mr. Mannion didn't know was that somebody was recording him. He had managed to free himself from the ties tying him by arm and legs to the chair and was wandering around the room, breathing on the sitters and touching them, pretending to be a materialized spirit. He was then exposed and his secret footage went viral in spiritualist circles. And sadly, behaviour like this sets the movement back enormously, making it a laughingstock, and it simply gives ammunition to the many sceptics. Interestingly, when mentioning this incident to my home circle tutors, my development group tutors, imagine my surprise when they told me they had actually been there at the time, and that one of them turned to the other in the dark and said, "Something's not right." They'd known mediumistically that all was not as it appeared to be. Anyway, he was cast out of the community with his reputation deservedly ruined. Perhaps it should be said here, as spiritual investigator Henry Steele Alcott once pointed out back in the 1800s, I'm happy to say, that class of pseudo-investigators which rejects the chance of finding truth in these marvels, because mediums occasionally cheat. It's often and justly been said that the circulation of counterfeit coins is no proof that the genuine does not exist. Con artists exist in all professions, and mediumship's just one of them. But fortunately, it seems that Edward Brackett became aware of the trickery used on him at some of these seances, and as a result, he didn't write about those in his book, for he quite naturally dismissed them as chicanery. Interestingly, at one of the seances that he did write about, Brackett said that his late wife materialised. He said he held onto her hand and as he let her go, she went down directly in front of me, within a foot of where I stood, her head and shoulders being the last part visible. And on the carpet where she disappeared, there was a glow of phosphorescent light, which gradually faded. If this is the case, it surely doesn't seem possible that a trickster impersonating a spirit could be lifting up a trapdoor and crawling inside of it. In this instant, for surely, the awkward movements of their body would have been seen by Brackett and all the other onlookers. And how could an impersonator disintegrate before his eyes, literally vanishing in front of them all? By trickery. But on his way home from that seance, Brackett could not stop thinking that he had been deceived, and he felt rather annoyed and became determined to investigate further, with a view to exposing it. So he resolved to attend more seances. At the very next one, he writes, "The forms were coming quite freely to me. I had my arm around the waist of the form that took me right into the cabinet. And once inside the cabinet," he says, "with my right hand, I reached out and satisfied myself that the medium was sitting in the chair. Another four materialised too. So there were four of them in there, and he said there could be no mistake. There were four of us in the cabinet, the two forms that appeared materialised, the medium and myself. I know how two got in, but where did the other two come from? Brackett set out to thoroughly search the cabinet. He had it pulled out and examined it completely. The floor, the wall, everything connected with it. But he couldn't find any tricks. Couldn't find any Confederates, he said. It was impossible for anyone to enter the cabinet except through the door of the seance room, in the presence of the whole audience. Even so, he asked to be seated right next to the cabinet and the medium for the next 40 seances, after which he concluded it was impossible that he could have been fooled. His wife materialised in many of these sessions, and if this had been an imposter, why was it that Brackett says the likeness of her was so marked that it would have been impossible to mistake it? In other words, the spirit that materialised looked so much like his wife that he felt no confusion about it at all. He also described other appearances of spirits. He said, I've seen a tall young man wearing a full beard, claiming to be the brother of a lady with me. The lady, though, didn't recognise her brother, telling him that he was just a boy when she knew him before he died. So here, then, is a perfect example of a living person impersonating a spirit, surely. But Brackett continues, when the lady said this, the spirit figure stooped, kissed her on the cheek, raised his face to hers without the beard, while at the same time diminishing in size until he was more nearly the boy she knew. So the spirit changed in shape and size right before her eyes. Again, if this was a person dressed up as a spirit, getting down on their knees, wouldn't Brackett and all the other people have seen the person do this? When it was light enough in the room to be seen, and when they were all watching so vividly. The same medium was written about by Florence Marryat in 1891, who wrote the book There Is No Death. And Mrs. Marryat said that she saw between 30 to 40 different materialised spirits, including mothers and babies, and her own deceased brother Frederick, who had drowned at sea. At another seance that Brackett attended, it was a private one this time, and there was just him and his friend William D. Brewer. They examined the cabinet beforehand, even though the medium, Mrs. Fairchild, didn't sit in it anyway, and the seance lasted for about 2 hours, during which time, says Brackett, scarcely a minute passed that there were not forms out in the room, sometimes three or four at once. As I examine the walls and everything connected with the temporary cabinet, I have no hesitation in saying that the forms came from or appeared in it were materialised beings. His niece appeared, he said, stretching out her bare arms and turning them so that everyone could see there was nothing in them. She brought the palms of her hands together, rubbing them as if rolling something between them. Very soon there descended from her hands a substance which looked like lace, until several yards of it lay upon the carpet. She asked her uncle Brackett to kneel, telling him he was too tall, and then she proceeded to make a robe with it around him. Then she said, "You have not enough hair," and upon rubbing her hands over his head, materialised a wig. Brackett's friend, Mr. Whitlock, who was the editor of Facts magazine, apparently saw his dead father materialise, and both he and his wife, who was also present, confirmed the likeness. Whitlock's written statement includes, "My father, Reverend G.O.C. Whitlock, who passed to spirit life about 20 years ago, was perfectly materialised." How could the impersonators have known then what these relatives had looked like and managed to ensure that they were identical in appearance to them? Doesn't seem possible that this was trickery.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.